Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Kickoff. My name is Cathal Minogue and it's another exciting weekend in the Premier League. Nathan Murphy from Off The Ball, he'll be in to look ahead to this weekend's fixtures. I think we'll have to chat about Grimsby Town beating Manchester United. Sorry, Man United fans. And also, I'll be joined by Fran Carroll from the Irish Bees. He's the founder of the Irish Bees. He'll be on to tell me about his love for Brentford Football Club. This is The Kickoff. Let's get into it.
The Kickoff on Today FM.
Welcome to another episode of The Kickoff with myself, Cathal Minogue. And I have the one and only Nathan Murphy from Off The Ball joining me. How are you, Nathan?
Cathal, an absolute pleasure to join the big show.
Ah, yeah. Well, look, we've already had Will and then we had Colm. So we said, who's next in line? Couldn't think of anyone better than yourself. Mayo man, Nathan Murphy.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see what you're going to bring to the party, Cathal. It's very exciting.
Well, no, the whole deal here is that you bring everything to the party and I just kind of facilitate.
Our deal this weekend, Cathal, is I'm going to bring something to this party, but we're at Electric Picnic on the Today FM Soundgarden, Saturday, 1:30, you are going to bring a lot to the Off The Ball party at the Soundgarden.
I'm bringing all the party. So you've kindly asked me to come along to the Soundgarden. You have a vague idea of what you're doing. Have you a better idea now that we're closer to the actual day?
What we're going to do at 1:30 on the Today FM Soundgarden is we're going to have a mashup between the crappy quiz and Ireland's greatest sports songs.
Okay.
So it's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot of great Irish music being played, but there is going to be a quiz and an interactive element as well to all of this that will involve your good self, Cathal, and the people in the audience who will be, I'm sure, getting in under the cover. The wind will be blowing. The rain might be there as well, but it'll all be fine in the Today FM Soundgarden and we'll have a little bit of crack as well with some very special guests.
Yeah, some very special guests. I'm excited. Myself and Dave are doing a gig then later on in the day. So look, this is a nice little warm-up for me just to get up on the stage, you know, to warm the voice. I'm guessing you're going to hang around then for the day and night.
Absolutely. I'll be front row for yourself and Dave.
Oh, you better not miss that. I wasn't even thinking.
Throwing off my top towards you.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, we need people up on stage for bits and pieces. So I might actually get you on stage for that as well, if you're up for that, Nathan.
Let's see what the contracts say. Yeah, I'll be Paul McGrawing my way around Electric Picnic.
Good man. We're definitely going to have a good weekend. I think one man who nearly hopes this weekend is done and then it's to the international break so that man can get a break is Ruben Amorim. Because, again, we talk about Manchester United on this podcast, on this show, Nathan. They lost to Grimsby Town.
Grim, eh?
Hey, Grim. Come on.
There's this great line that someone says that in Premier League, there's always, every day, one team in crisis and your goal as a manager should be to never be that team. And here we are, a fortnight into the season and already it feels Manchester United have been the crisis club for probably half of that time. And from a position where they were losing on the opening weekend of the season, but people were managing to draw positives of it to, you know, 10 days on. And it does feel we're going into this weekend asking the question that if they were to lose to Burnley, would Ruben Amorim still be the manager at the end of the international break? And I felt, Cathal, on Wednesday night, he almost had his Steve McLaren moment. Do you remember the Wally with the Brolly, where it was lashing rain at Wembley and Steve McLaren did what you might have thought was a sensible thing and just took out the Brolly to keep himself dry, and next thing you're on the back of every tabloid as the Wally with the Brolly, and he never really lived that down or was able to save face. I think Ruben Amorim and that picture of him with the tactics board,
yeah,
that has very quickly become a meme where, you know, he's playing guess who in some of them and he just looks utterly idiotic as they keep their new 75 million euro striker Benjamin Šeško to the very end of the penalty takers while Amorim is just sitting in the dugout with his head down, not paying any attention or wanting to watch any of it. It felt like for him, maybe Wednesday night was a bit of a turning point with the fans, who up to now, I think, have been putting a lot of the blame on certain players and definitely on the running of the club. But now a sense of, okay, does this guy actually know how to turn this around?
He seems broken now. So could it be a case that he would just walk, or is it the case that they could get rid of him in the next few months if things don't turn around? There seems to be a pattern here with Manchester United managers.
Well, this was the exact same scenario as they had last season with Erik ten Hag, where you felt that if he didn't start well and if there was a bit of a dip, that they would get rid of him quite quickly. Now, that came off the fact that there'd been a change in ownership and it did seem as though some people had wanted to get rid of him that summer. That hasn't been the case with Amorim, and they've gone and they've backed him. Like, you would expect if they're with their first choice team this week, they will start with a front three of Šeško, Mbeumo and Cunha. Three new signings, almost 200 million. Dorgu will play on one side. They'll have Bruno Fernandes in the middle of midfield. They have invested a lot. Now, they're probably still not there, but he has shown that he is not for turning in terms of the way he wants to play with his 3-4-3 system. And it just hasn't clicked in any way, even with the new signings. And listen, will he walk? There's obviously a lot of money at stake, is the one thing with all of these deals. Like, what does walking mean? Is it a mutual consent where he gets the few million payoff? Like, if they were to fire him, I don't think he'd have any real room for complaint. Like, they've played 29 Premier League games since he came in. He won 7 of them. He was saved last season by getting to the Europa League final, but then that was a complete shambles when they actually got to the final. And he's felt since very early in this that maybe he was looking around wondering, had I made the right choice? Because remember, we're talking about someone who was massively in demand. There was talk when Jurgen Klopp left Liverpool that Liverpool were interested in bringing him in and that he didn't want to go at that stage. He had strongly linked with a West Ham job, and maybe was more his level. But unless there's a rapid upturn in results, I don't think they'll get rid of him this weekend. But the next 3-4 fixtures between September and October's international break, if there's not a quick upturn in fortunes, I think there's every chance they'll be looking elsewhere again.
Will they? Yeah, and they play Burnley at the weekend on Saturday at 3 p.m. And it does seem quite incredible and slightly insane that he isn't for turning and he isn't changing the way he should be playing with the players that he has. Do you think that he will? Will he eventually meet breaking point, or he's gone this far?
I don't think so. I don't think so, Cahill, because there was an argument that this was one of the reasons that Liverpool didn't push harder for him, that he was so set in this tactical system that Liverpool would have had to obviously make a lot of changes to their playing staff to adapt to that, and they didn't want to make that level of investment. He certainly has never given any indication that he feels like the system is wrong. And now that he's actually bought players that should fit better into that system, you'd have to imagine he's going to stick with it. But it is at odds in some ways with how a lot of modern clubs are run, where you have, and Manchester United have put a lot of money again into getting people behind the scenes and new directors and new people to run the footballing side of the club, that you try and sort of future-proof yourself at a Premier League club now, Cahill, in that you put all those people in place so they make a lot of the signings. The manager doesn't have as much influence. So if the manager leaves, the next manager can come in and just take over and be satisfied with the group of players. Whereas what's happened with Manchester United for the, what are we now going on, 12 and a half, 13 years since Alex Ferguson left, is every manager has come in, try to make complete and total overhaul of the squad. And next thing, the next guy comes in, he's like, well, I can't work with these players. And it's just this relentless cycle. And, you know, I assumed last season was as low as it can get, and almost a false low, that they sort of gave up in the second half of the season to concentrate in Europe, and that Manchester United are at worst a sort of top 8, top 10 club. But looking at them again last night, the lack of fight, the lack of cohesion, the lack of a plan, you wouldn't be at all surprised if they end up, you know, 10th, 11th again this year.
Yeah, it's a sad scene. And I actually kind of felt sorry for him when you do see that photo of him with the drenched hair. Like, it feels like he's just yearning for the sunny Portuguese
weather.
Steve
McClaren ruined it for everybody, didn't he? Just because he put the brolly up and lost the game. If he put the brolly up when he was winning, maybe it would have been acceptable for all the managers to keep themselves dry.
Yeah, yeah. A team that have definitely have a different trajectory and are hoping for much bigger things than top middle table in the Premier League is Arsenal. And we will chat later on in the show about Liverpool Arsenal. That's on this Sunday, live on Sky Sports in Anfield, 4:30 on Sunday. We'll get to that. But I did want to mention, Nathan, that I don't know what you were doing when you were a young fella at 15, although I did see a great video of you. I think it's in your early 20s or something like that, and you're on stage with the Happy Mondays. They can save the day when best it's in.
County Mayo.
It's an incredible video, and it actually shocked me. I had to watch it a couple of times. But Max Dowman, who is old enough to play in the Premier League, but I mean, he's still a kid. He's 15 years old. Is the second youngest player to play in the Premier League. It's incredible, really, isn't it?
It's hard to get your head around, as you say, when you're 15. What was we doing? Our junior cert. You know, you were concentrating on our sport as well. We were very disciplined folk, I'm sure, myself and yourself, Cottle. Well, different generations at 15, you know, we were trying to make the best of ourselves, no messing, nothing like that. But what Max Dowman's doing to go on at the, remember, we're talking the Premier League here. This is the highest level of football. This is the highest level of professional sport. And, you know, you go out this weekend, you'll see kids playing under 15, under 16 football, you know, having a good time, yeah, going out with their mates, having a laugh, trying their best. Probably some of them still thinking, maybe I can make it. And here's a kid the exact same age who's going out and doing it. And then you have a player for Liverpool against Newcastle at 16 in Rio and Yuma going out and scoring a spectacular goal. And you just wonder how this is starting to happen with Lamine Yamal and his development at 16, 17 at Barcelona. Are we going to see more of this? Is the strength and conditioning and how clubs can look after players from a far younger age, does that mean now that physically they're a lot more ready than they were 10, 20 years ago? Or are we going to be sitting here in 10, 20 years' time going, Max Dowman, whatever happened to that kid?
Yeah, because it can
doesn't feel like that right now because he is so good. But Arsenal, and this is the problem with modern day professional football. So, you know, he's playing out on the right hand side at the moment, and Bukayo Saka has just got injured. So you think maybe there's more of a chance, but they spent 50 million quid on Noni Madueke. They bring in other players to play in that position as well. And suddenly, at the moment where you need to make the breakthrough and you need to take your chance, maybe it's not there for you. So there's nothing ever, ever set in stone. But the talent that he has, you got to feel that he's going to go a long way very quickly.
Yeah, but it can go one or two ways, can't it? Because, you know, you hope this doesn't happen, but a player playing at that level so early, you know, you just hope that he avoids injury and that he does has a long career ahead of him. It's actually interesting as well. I was reading about the difficulties in even managing him in comparison to the other players, just because of his age, even when it comes to getting changed in the changing room. And obviously he still has to go to school, and there has to be basically an adult with him for most of the time. So it's a hard balance, isn't it? Like, Arteta really must fancy what this guy is going to bring to the team, because there's a lot of moving parts that come with a young player.
Yeah, because sometimes you wonder if a manager throws a young player on because they want to send out a message maybe to the ownership of, look, I'm having to play a 15-year-old because I don't have enough talent on my bench, so I'm going to have to resort to this. You don't get that sense with Arteta. Like, this kid has been around the first team squad for quite a while now. They've been teasing this for quite a while, that he could come on and make this sort of impression in a Premier League game. And maybe the fact they do have those options in front of him mean that they can be patient. But as you say, the having to get up the next day and go to school, and listen, I'm not sure how much school he's doing, but there's a prime example here in Ireland with Michael Noonan of Shamrock Rovers, who at 16, you know, becomes the youngest ever scorer in European football, and then is back up the next morning, first thing, flying home. I had about 3 hours sleep, and his mom is dropping him into school.
Yeah, so that photo is incredible.
That they're doing that, and that they're keeping that side of things, because again, there's no guarantees. But I think for Max Dowman, and probably the contract he's on already, even at 15, or the contract he's going to walk into. But there are no guarantees in football. And, you know, you look at the list of youngest players, you look at the list of youngest scorers, somebody like James Vaughan, who's still the youngest ever scorer in the Premier League. You know, he went on and he had a decent career. He played at championship level, he played at lower league level, but never went on to play for England or anything like that. But then the next two on the list are James Milner and Wayne Rooney, who, you know, James Milner still playing.
Yeah.
Going to go on and become the player with the most amount of Premier League appearances of all time over the course of the season, in all likelihood. And Wayne Rooney's arguably Manchester United's greatest ever player, certainly greatest ever goal scorer. So, you know, if the talent is there at that age, you'd feel now the clubs, again, they can be a bit more patient and they can guide them through, hopefully, for Max Dowman's sake.
Yeah, and I'd imagine when you were 15, you were kicking around a football in Mayo, hoping that someday I will captain this Mayo team to All-Ireland glory in Croke Park.
I certainly didn't think that, you know, going on 30 years later, we'd still be waiting. Whether it was me or somebody else, Cahill, that would lead us to glory in Croke Park. Regardless of who it is, it still hasn't happened.
No, it hasn't. Someday, Nathan. Well, look, you'll be back later on because we do want to look ahead to this weekend's games, particularly Liverpool-Arsenal. That seems to be the pick of the weekend. You are listening to The Kickoff with myself, Cathal Minogue, and Nathan Murphy. Nathan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Cathal.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Welcome back to The Kickoff. My name is Cathal Minogue and now I am joined by Fran Carroll. Fran is the founder of the Irish Bees, the Irish supporters group for Brentford Football Club. How are you, Fran?
I'm very good, thanks, Cathal. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, thanks for chatting with me. Brentford, you know, I don't think I've ever actually met in person a Brentford fan. You don't hear of too many around Ireland, but there's a supporters club and you're the founder of it. So is there many Irish Brentford fans?
There are surprisingly, yes, there is. At the moment I've got, well, last year I had 90 signed up members into the club. This year I've got about 45 or 50 right. already signed up, and I've a good few people contacted me. I had the young fella from Cliftonville that just signed yesterday for the Academy, Madden. Mm. I had his dad contacted me today, actually, to join the club.
No way,
well.
Corin Madden, yes, is that his name?
Yeah. He's meant to be very good. I don't know an awful lot about him, but he seems to be a very good addition. One of my members is Fintan Murray up in Belfast, Belfast B, he calls himself. He's a very big Cliftonville fan and he raves about him.
Okay, brilliant. That's great. Yeah, it's a great connection to have. And you founded the club. When did you? When did you start it up?
It was around 2010, 2011, I think. I always thought I was the only Brentford fan of the country, you know. And I set up a Facebook page. I contacted the club and they said, look, there's a bias, which is the Brentford Independent Association of Supporters. And they had a Facebook page set up for Ireland, but nobody's run it. And they said, welcome to the team kind of thing. Mm. And there's a Facebook page. Run with it, see what you can get. So that was my first dealing and setup for the supporters club. And initially, you know, it was slow enough, but I met my one of the first Brentford supporters I met was Ronan Lally, who contacted me via the Facebook page. And we met up over for a game in Wembley. It was a JPT trophy. I think it was against Carlisle. Now, I don't know what year that was. I can't remember. But I started from there, just from a Facebook page and then a bit of Twitter. And we've been growing slowly and since then. And obviously with the Premier League, you know, plenty more people contacting us looking to join in and see if they get involved with us, you know.
And how did you fall in love with Brentford?
To be honest, I grew up as a Man United supporter.
this is a common team, you know. Either you've grown up as the Man United supporter, or it's in the family somewhere along the line. But you get out.
Yeah, I think it was similar to your last last guest from the Irish Mags. I think it was
Paul. Yeah, from Galway. You're the West of Ireland man as well. Are you Sligo?
I'm Sligo. Yeah, initially. yeah. Now I've been in Dublin many a year, but I was over in London. I'd moved over to London. I'd been away traveling, and my brother was living in London. I went over to work and live with him for a while, and then I actually moved into the Brentford High Street and lived above the shops in Brentford High Street. But as I say, I was a Man United supporter, and every day I drove past Griffin Park, and I always kind of thought to myself, who would support that a team like that? Yeah. When there's so many big clubs around London, you know. Hmm. And anyway, it turns out they got, I think it was 1998, 99, they got drawn against Spurs in the old League Cup, the old Worthington Cup. And I managed to get my hands on about 6 tickets from my brother, myself, and a couple of his mates. But they were all scattered across the ground. It was a sellout crowd, obviously playing, you know, Spurs. So I went along, and I sat down in a seat beside some old guy who, you know, back in the day, I suppose the season ticket holders had reserved written on the seats. Mm. And I kind of looked at him, took a double take, and I went, Jesus, is this seat taken? He goes, oh no, Jesus, no, that's that's my son's seat. This is or was my son's seat, and I was going, oh Jesus. And anyway, he, as it turns out, he says, no, he moved down to Brighton and became a bloody Seagulls fan. But okay. He was disgusted. But I sat down and I just started having a conversation with him, and he introduced me to all his buddies, around that were sitting there, and I just loved the atmosphere straight away, and just the chat. I was kind of getting fed up at Man United winning everything, to be perfectly honest. And I was back to kind of watching, I suppose, what you call real hard football. At the time, I think we were in Division 2.
Okay.
I've followed them since, from League 2. I followed that journey from League 2 all the way to the Premier League, which has been quite an amazing journey. It was the people, it was the fans, it was the ground. The Griffin Park was a wonderful stadium, so tight. And I started going back every whenever I could on a Saturday and Tuesday nights. And then I think the following year I moved back home to Dublin, and I became a season ticket holder when I came home. I also had an ulterior motive of trying to get my godson, Sam, to convert from being a Chelsea supporter to a Brentford supporter. So as part of his birthday presents, he got a season ticket, which my brother then used along with mine. And as fate went, I converted him to Brentford.
He is converted, is he?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, 100%.
Okay, so it's one person at a time. You're changing the minds and the loyalty of football fans around the country, just one person at a time. They no longer play in Griffin Park, of course.
No, we moved to the G-Tech now, which is, I suppose, people call it the Lego Stadium. But again, a wonderful stadium, great atmosphere in there. We don't have the biggest capacity, but it certainly generates a fabulous atmosphere when, and particularly obviously when we win. But another good, an amazing piece of architecture to squeeze it into the space that they did.
Yeah, the railway line kind of goes beside it, does it? Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. I think there was a V shape of it, so they were trying to squeeze it around the railway line. So they did an amazing job, and I mean there was huge work involved. Particularly by I used to be on the board for the Bees United, which is the supporters trust, which I'd recommend any of the Brentford supporters to join. And they were very much involved with the obviously with the club and keeping it alive. But they're trying to keep that stadium in the area, in the Hounslow area, was hugely important. And to be able to, through the fabulous work of them all involved, to be able to keep that ground to only move a mile away was unbelievable.
Yeah. And you said you have a season ticket, you're a season ticket holder. So do you get over to many games? How many games would you try and get over to in a year?
Well, I don't get over to enough, but I try to get 3-4 if I can. But I travel over with my son. My son's just about to turn 16, so obviously he's a converted fan.
He another one.
God bless him. When he was in primary school, when he was supporting Brentford, and everyone else going, who are they? But we kind of got the glass laugh eventually.
Yeah.
So we travel over. Two or three times a year. And I also through the supporters club with the club we I arranged for tickets for us to go over as a group for the last game of the home game of the season.
Ah, brilliant! Okay,
and I try to get an away game in every now and then, but that's I try to do that on my own and have a bit of a session with the lads, kind of thing. But
yeah, that you're not kind of working at, because I suppose when you're going to the one when you're organising all the members, it kind of it's a great day out, but I suppose there's a bit of responsibility in your hands as well for those days.
Yeah. It's all great fun, though. It's all great fun.
Now there seems to be an Irish interest. I know even just since I've started this show, we've been talking a bit more about Brentford. Obviously now, because Keith Andrews is the manager, you've got Caoimhín Kelleher in the goal and Nathan Collins is obviously the captain. Even in the last few months, have you seen any spike in an interest, or is it yet to snowball from that?
Certainly is. I get a lot of people contacting me, yeah. But there's always been that Irish connection with the club, and again, it was something that I always loved. Again, my first game, there was a guy called Tony Folan, who used to, I think he finished his career in Galway, was a real fan favourite. And it's great to see, again, the huge Irish connection we have now. you know, it's amazing. We're gone from a huge Danish infusion of the club to an Irish, an Irish one, you know, after Thomas Frank left. But I mean, the Irish connection and the fact that Keith Andrews was given the chance to manage this team, I think, you know, every Irish fan should be immensely proud of that Matthew Benham would put the trust in him. He wouldn't have been many people's first choice. He certainly wasn't my first choice, but Matthew Benham hasn't gone wrong with his appointments, and if he's got the trust in him, I think with the rest of all have to back him. And I think already kind of proven, you know, it could be a very good appointment. Okay, the first match of the season didn't go well, but you know, the last two, between the Premier League one and the Carabao Cup game, yeah, there the other night against Bournemouth, you know, we're is looking very positive for us.
Yeah, 2-0 against Bournemouth, and you beat Aston Villa 1-0. You play Sunderland at the weekend, 3 p.m. on Saturday. Another great chance to pick up 3 points there as well, away from home. That's the only thing. And Sunderland have picked up 3 points already.
Yeah, absolutely. It's away from home, but you know, and Sunderland seem to be playing very well. You just never know, but I think Keith's getting the team. You know, there seems to be, again, the first match, the team he put wouldn't have been my first choice. It seems to have brought in, I think, what a lot of fans would say, yeah, is probably his better 11 coming in. So yeah, very good chance to pick up another 3 points. You know, and again, it's the teams that have just been promoted, they're always the ones you want to, you probably need to win in order for us to keep, you know, that middle table or top 10 as we got last year, you know, to be able to stay at that standard and make sure we're not anywhere near the bottom.
But
a lot of the pundits were kind of predicting, you know, and I'm, you know, hopefully they're kind of backtrack on that a little bit now after the last couple of performances, and we continue to perform like we have in the last couple of games.
Yeah, and it's really important for Keith Andrews as well as a rookie manager to start well. Obviously a loss, as you said, in the first day, but the win against Aston Villa was great. You know, just even to get that monkey off your back, the fans are with you, you know, and I feel like that they do like him. And results, that's how you win over the fans. It's all about the results. Like top 10, you were 10th last season, which was fantastic, and as you said, pundits are tipping you know there's maybe 5 or 6 teams that they say could be in a dangerous spot, and Brentford are one of them. What are your goals for the year? Is it just to stay alive, or are you saying no, do one better than last year? Or
no, absolutely, do one better than last year. You know, my point of view, obviously, you know, I'd love to win the Premier League, you know, but I think realistically, you know, if we continue in the vein we did last year, we could be going for a European spot, you know. Hopefully it's not a case that, you know, results don't go our way and we stay in the bottom half of the table, but we're certainly a top mid-table side, I think, once we're playing well. But again, it all goes down to see how the players react to the new manager. Also, you know, we have the other new Irish connection with Stephen Rice coming in as he's come in as a set piece coach.
Yes, yeah.
You can see the job. I always thought when Keith was doing that role, when a goal came off, you could see the relationship he had with the players. They would run to the sideline and they would celebrate with him. So he obviously has a huge, a very good relationship with all the players, the great respect for him. And hopefully that'll continue, particularly if the results go our way, you know.
Yeah, well, I'd imagine if they do well or they do terrible this season, Fran, you'll still be supporting them no matter what happens, and probably every other member of the Irish Bees. If anyone has any interest, and where can they find the Irish Bees if they would like to know a bit more?
You can drop me an email at francos@live.ie, and I'll send on information to anyone that's interested in joining the Irish Bees, and be delighted to have a few more Irish supporters into our group.
Good man. Fair play. Fran Carroll, best of luck for the season. Thanks a million for talking to me. We'll be watching with vested interest here. We've kind of said that Brentford are our unofficial, the team for the show. That's the kind of the team we want to follow. I think everyone's is buying in and hopes that Keith Andrews and all the Irish lads do well. So best of luck for the season. Enjoy the games that you're going over. And thanks a million for talking to me, Fran.
Cheers. Have a good one.
The Kickoff on Today FM.
Welcome back to The Kickoff, and Nathan Murphy from Off The Ball. He's decided to come back. Thanks for coming back, first of all. Okay, you did well in the first half. How are you feeling about the second?
Yeah, but listen, am I going to be substituted before the hour mark?
Well, do you know what? Our subs bench is pretty empty.
I'll be taking my jersey off and throwing it at you in disgust.
Do you know what? The subs bench is pretty empty, so they're all down in Stradbally. So do you know what? You're safe anyway, unless you want to leave. Come here, we'll look ahead to two of the games anyway this weekend. Wolves-Everton is on Saturday at 3 p.m. And wanted to talk to you about this because there's a good bit of Irish interest, isn't there?
Yeah, there definitely is. Maybe all around the one position, which is the right back position, because both Matt Doherty on Wolves, Jake O'Brien at Everton, and then Seamus Coleman waiting in the wings, who played in the League Cup during the week. Seamus Coleman's going to turn 37 in the next month or so. He's into his 17th season. Incredible longevity, but not in the Ireland squad for the upcoming World Cup qualifiers. Yeah. And I'm sure desperately disappointed with that. But he's just been so dogged by injury over the last few years. He only started two Premier League games last season. I think it was six the season before that. So you can understand why Hamer Hallgrimsson didn't include him. And also it's an area where we have a huge amount of depth because, you know, Jake O'Brien has come in. I think eventually he'll end up in a centre-back, but is doing very well for Everton on the right-hand side. I think Matt Doherty is one of the great success stories of Irish football. I know there's people listening, Cahill, who'll be texting in and going, doesn't put in enough effort, don't like the sort of lackadaisical running style, and he's taken a huge amount of stick at times when he's been wearing an Ireland jersey. But this guy has been, at times, among the best right-backs in the Premier League over the past decade, and from still to be there. And Wolves are a team that spend a lot of money every summer, and sort of the way Glenn Whelan did for a long time at Stoke, no matter who they bring in, Matt Doherty remains.
Yeah. And who would be your pick on current form? Jake O'Brien or Matt?
I think he will go with Matt Doherty at right back.
Tried and trusted.
Big games. Tried and trusted. Again, has played a lot of these big internationals, has started a lot under Hallgrimsson since he's come in. So I think the likelihood is that Doherty is still ahead of O'Brien, though I suspect the majority of fans were always looking for the hot new thing and the fresh face. And look, Jake O'Brien's playing at such a high level with Everton in the Premier League as well, that, you know, to have be in a position where we're probably leaving out a Premier League regular is actually a nice position for Ireland to be in right now.
Yeah, yeah. And Everton obviously had a great weekend last weekend. Their opening league match in the Hill Dickinson Stadium. Do you think I think it's going to stick, the Hill Dickinson Stadium? Will it be called Bramley Moor? Well,
if you want to come up with a shortened version of it, you go for it there, Cahill.
The Hill... Yeah, I got nothing.
You got nothing.
But it was a great weekend for him last weekend. First weekend, at home weekend, and Jack Grealish. It's very, very exciting for Everton fans. Wolves, it's a bit of a different story.
Yeah, like Wolves have consistently found themselves in this position where maybe it works as a business in what they're doing, in that they're selling their best players, it feels, every summer. And last year, Pedro Neto ends up leaving. This summer, we've seen Mateus Cunha already go to Manchester United. And, you know, Wolves probably would have been in a relegation fight last year if it wasn't for Mateus Cunha. And now Jacob Strand-Larsen, who also got into double figures last season, he's sort of involved in this relentless, never-ending transfer merry-go-round involving Alexander Isak. And he might be the one to replace Isak if Isak ultimately ends up going to Liverpool. And you'd really worry for Wolves this season if Strand-Larsen was to join Cunha in leaving, particularly with what we've seen over the first few weeks, Cahill, which is that maybe the promoted clubs this year have a bit more about them than what we've seen over the last couple of years, where we've had 2 years in a row where the three promoted clubs have gone straight back down.
Yeah.
But certainly Sunderland definitely feel like they are a team who can do things, and likewise Burnley. So I think if Strand-Larsen goes, you'd be very concerned about Wolves this season.
Yeah, I think I heard Gary Lineker say that it's the first time since 2016 that all three teams that have been promoted have gotten a win in the opening two weekends of the Premier League. So, like, it's incredible, because it just doesn't happen.
No, and I think one of the things to watch out for as the season goes on, Cahill, again, going back to the transfer market and what the teams at the top have done, and you've been talking about this over the last few weeks, like the investment that Liverpool have put in, Manchester City, Arsenal, Tottenham, all of these clubs, they've sort of raided the middle class. So that group last year that were so exciting, and Brentford and Brighton and Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
And all of those clubs are losing their best players to the top teams. So I wonder then, is that going to actually see them fall back maybe closer to the promoted sides and give them an opportunity to pick up a few more points? Because, look, Brighton have lost João Pedro. Brentford have lost Mbeumo, may lose Vissa. Crystal Palace have already lost Eze, may lose Gehi as well.
Yeah.
All of those clubs have just lost to the top four, top six.
Yeah, it's a good point. Well, up at the top of the table, probably the two teams that will be gunning for the title this year, because obviously Manchester City now are just, they've no hope of winning the title after last weekend. Liverpool Arsenal, it's on a 4:30, it's in Anfield, it's live on Sky Sports. This should be a cracker.
It should be. It's very early in the season and you'd almost want everything to be done and the transfer window closed and all of that for a game of this magnitude, because this is the meeting of last season's top two. Arsenal have finished second three seasons in a row. Like, both sides have managed to start the season with a couple of wins. Liverpool, very unconvincing defensively in both of those victories. Last minute winners in both games. Again, is it a sign of a good team, a team of incredible character who know how to win these games, that they can hang on in there? A lesser team, maybe, if they give up a 2-goal lead, would end up either settling for that or not going on and maybe losing the game. Whereas Arsenal last week, I think, really showed their force after maybe some questions about the United game, the way they crushed Leeds. Now, they do have some injury issues straight away with Saka and Odegaard, but the signings they've made mean they have a good bit of strength. And if Arsenal want to win the league, I think they need to be winning games like this. I still go back to the start of last season as to, look, they had a lot of discipline issues. They had red cards that cost them games. But against Manchester City and against Liverpool, they should have won both of those matches. They played Liverpool towards the, probably first third of last season at the Emirates, and they were by far the better team, and Liverpool got away with a 2-2 draw. And then you might remember the mad game against Manchester City where they had a player sent off and they basically just set up camp inside their own penalty area for the entire game and eventually conceded in the last minute.
Yeah.
Again, you win those two games at crucial times. And if Liverpool are a little bit flaky at the moment at the back and struggling in midfield to figure out what they're doing now that they signed Wirtz, you got to make the most of these opportunities and try and build up a lead. Remember, Arsenal last season weren't top of the table after a single game week. So try and get yourself in front early on and get yourself into the mix post-Christmas that you're having the big games that matter. But yeah, I think these games are going to be better this year than they were maybe last year. We've gone through such a brilliant spell of Liverpool, Manchester City, Tottenham, Arsenal. When they've met, they've been classics. Last season, they were a little bit tighter. I wonder, with the way particularly Liverpool are playing, could this be wide open? And what have we in Liverpool's games so far? We had five goals the first week, seven goals. Yeah, so we're getting a lot of goals in Liverpool games. Well, we're getting, 11-2 so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's going to make it exciting, how strong they are up front. They're so open at the back at the moment that, I mean, they've scored seven goals in their last two games, but they've conceded as well as conceded a lot. That whoever, it's going to be exciting anyway. You'd imagine it's going to be open football. So, I mean, that you have that to look forward to as a neutral, maybe not if you're a Liverpool fan.
No, I think Liverpool supporters are a bit concerned that they're going back to maybe the worrying parts of Klopp's last era where, there was promising moments, but then they were undone by being too open. And Slot came in and fixed that week one last year. But they had a midfield that was probably surprisingly the best midfield in the league last season with Gravenberch, McAllister and Szoboszlai. And he's changed that and he's gone for a far more attacking player in Florian Wirtz and, spent a record amount of money to bring him. So you have to play him. And fortunate or misfortunate with, Gravenberch being suspended, then McAllister missing out over the first couple of weeks of the season. So how does he squeeze those three into two positions and who are going to be the two? I think McAllister has to be one of them. I think he's arguably the best midfielder in the Premier League right now. So you have to have him in there. And then who gives you the legs alongside him? Because, look, they've just looked wide open when teams run at them. And Kanate has been very poor at the start of the season. Very loose, rash tackles, sloppy in possession. Maybe no surprise they're looking at potentially signing another centre-back. They have injury issues at right-back. And again, for a team that have spent an insane amount of money, just look a little bit lacking in depth in certain areas, which, again, for having spent, several hundred million already and maybe another couple of hundred million to come, is a bit strange.
Before you go, what's your prediction?
Oh, well, I sit in the fence, Carl. I should
no,
just sit in the
come
fence.
On. It's Electric Picnic weekend. Come on, you've got to let the shackles off.
Let's go. I'm going to go with what we've seen from the first 2 weeks from Liverpool, and that I think we're going to get a last-minute winner in this game. I just don't know to who.
You can't give me a... So that's a terrible...
There's my prediction. No, I don't need to say a team. That's an even better prediction. We're going to get a last-minute winner. So stay tuned all the way through.
Wow, well, look there. And if that doesn't make you want to watch it, I don't know what will. Nathan, thank you very much. I'll see you in Stradbally. Are you bringing the guitar?
We'll see what happens. All right. We'll see what happens. I'll bring me maracas from the Happy Mondays anyways, and we'll work it from there.
Yeah.
You just bring your singing voice.
Okay.
And we'll go. There's a little hint as to what might be coming.
Okay. Wow. I'd say there's people flocking to Stradbally now as they hear this.
Right.
Nathan, thank you very much. Have a wonderful weekend and we'll talk to you next week. Good luck.
Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.